Hi, I'm David Crowe. Thank you for tuning in to episode 117 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crowe with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth or follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. Listen to us every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN.fm or download us after broadcast on iTunes or other podcast programs. And remember, I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show, and if you include your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift. If you would like to sponsor this show as an individual or an advertiser, please contact me. If you'd like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're a member of, also contact me. I'll speak on science, medicine, censorship, viruses, democracy, or other social issues. I'd be happy to discuss this opportunity with you. Dr. Joel Wallach is a doctor of veterinary medicine and a naturopath who has used his knowledge of animal health through nutrition to improve human health through nutrition. He's particularly knowledgeable in the area of trace minerals and sells supplements through his company, Youngevity. Dr. Wallach, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate your hospitality. Look forward to doing some great things with you.
Yeah. So you were trained as a veterinarian. So why should people listen to you talk about human health?
Well, for two reasons. Whether it's nutrients or pharmaceuticals, all things before they are given to humans and approved by the FDA and the government and so forth are tested in animals first. So we know a lot more about nutrition and pharmaceuticals in the animal industry than doctors do. Okay? Doctors are very ignorant of these things. And I have literally millions of examples of that because they only know kind of the tail end was fed to them or they're prescribing pharmaceuticals. That's why you see so many 1-800-BAD-DRUG things on TV. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I have a degree in agriculture, a veterinarian. I'm a comparative pathologist where I do autopsies in animals and people, did big NIH projects with 20,000 autopsies. The 1,200-page book that came out of that's in the Smithsonian Institute as a national treasure. I mean, does your physician have a book in the Smithsonian Institute as a national treasure? I don't think so.
My and position. Then, I think you're making some assumptions here.
And then I'm a naturopathic physician licensed in Oregon and California. So I'm a primary care physician as well as a pathologist, a veterinarian, and have a degree in agriculture. So I have a different perspective than the average naturopathic physician, chiropractor, medical doctor, pharmacist. And this is why what we do is extremely different from everybody else.
Okay, so what does the average allopathic MD know about nutrition? What are they taught in
medical school? They
know nothing
about nutrition. They don't even know there's more than four food groups. If you ask them, okay, name the food groups. Name the nutrients in the food groups are essential. He doesn't know that there's 90 essential nutrients. The medical doctors have never trained that there's 60 essential minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, things like three essential fatty acids. Medical doctors do not know these things, okay? In fact, I had a call this morning from a hysterical woman who called me up and said, oh, my husband's yellow all over, and he's been to 7 internists, and they've tested his liver enzymes. They've tested everything. They can't find anything wrong with him, but he's yellow all over, and they know he has jaundice. They said, are his eyes yellow? She says, no. Okay, I already know the answer. Does he juice in the morning? Yes, he juices. The greens and carrots? I said, well, he's got beta-carotene accumulating under his skin.
Really?
Is he sick? No, he's not sick. He just looks yellow. Yeah, he's got red hair, and he's very white skin. And so he's just storing beta-carotene under his skin. And that you went to 7 internists, and none of them knew this. She says, oh, no, they're sure he's got some kind of horrible liver problem that's new and genetic and undetectable and blah, blah, blah.
Right,
blah.
So he's just overdosing on carrots.
Yeah, overdosing on carrots, and so the beta-carotene is storing in his body fat. And so this super white-skinned, red-haired guy looks yellow now, but his eyes, his sclera of his eyes, the whites of his eyes is not yellow. So when you have jaundice, you have plugged biliary system in your liver, you have liver damage, your eyes are going to get yellow, not your skin.
Right. That is pretty remarkable. I believe there was a product where you could get a fake tan, which was basically eating lots of beta carotene, and it makes your skin kind of orangey, and like that could mm-hmm. be mistaken for tan, I guess, if you're
a simpleton. Orange is different than brown.
Yeah, exactly, but I guess it worked for some people. So what can we learn about animal nutrition that's applicable to human nutrition?
Okay, well, let's just take one that's a big one. Well, there's three or four big deals, but let's take one or two of them. I think number one is obesity, since America is now the number one obese nation in the world. It was a cover article in Time magazine about 2 years ago. It says the coming epidemic of obesity. Now, epidemic's the word you normally use for infectious diseases. Why on earth would they look at an epidemic of obesity when it's thought to be caused by a lack of exercise and eating too much? Well, we followed that theory for 125 years and we became the number one obese nation in the world. So that's a failed theory. So what is obesity? Obesity is actually a deficiency of any one nutrient that comes from a particular class of nutrients. There's three nutrients in that class. If you're deficient in any one of those, you're going to be a 400-pound, 600-pound, 800-pound person. And I do 1,000 of those kind of people every month. We get them to lose a half a pound to 2 pounds a day because we know what's missing. We know the combination of the lock. We give them the 90 essential nutrients, 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 3 fatty acids. We throw in a little bit of extra, what we call the secret sauce, those three special nutrients that are necessary to not only prevent but to reverse obesity, and they'll lose a half a pound or 2 pounds a day. I've had people come to me, they weigh 440 pounds. 7 months later, they weigh 165. 6 years later, they're still 165 because they stayed on the 90 essential nutrients appropriate for the body weight.
A lot of people
have diabetes.
Right. A lot of people have criticized the American, particularly American, obsession with the low-fat diet. Is this part of it?
Well, it's definitely part of it. A keto diet is very important to make sure you're avoiding carbohydrates. If you want to fatten cattle in a feedlot so that they look nice in a steakhouse and taste good, guess what? You better be high carbs, low fat.
Well, so feed them corn, right?
Plenty of corn, plenty of carbs, many different sources, potato flour, everywhere you can get it. But when it comes to, in fact, I actually have a new CD coming out in a couple of weeks. It's called Stick of Butter a Day Keeps the Doctor Away. Mm. I said this, David, in 1971 after doing my first 20,000 autopsies. And it was very obvious that everything that the medical system has been saying about genetics and lack of exercise and eating too much, all those things were absolutely wrong, 180 degrees wrong. I'm finding type 2 diabetes in crocodiles. I'm finding sickle cell anemia in hummingbirds and deer. So it couldn't be genetic. How do you get human genetic disease in these animals?
Right.
It turns out to be universal deficiencies in vertebrates, whether you're a hummingbird or a deer, a crocodile, an elephant, giraffe, rat, dog, human being. If you're a vertebrate and you're deficient in a particular nutrient, every vertebrate will get the same disease. And that was a universal finding. That's why that book, that 1,200-page book on my first 20,000 autopsies, is in the Smithsonian Institute as a national treasure. And one of the things it said was that you cannot get everything you need from your food anymore, and that these nutrients will prevent obesity, and carbohydrates are one of the worst foods. So you have to take the nutrients, stay away from carbs. And so we put together diets that people can use, very simple things. We also have supplements that are ketogenic. And then we have the supplements with the secret sauces in them for the nutrients that are missing. And so people begin to immediately lose weight, half a pound, 2 pounds a day. I've had people lose 4 pounds a day, and they need to lose 400 pounds.
So you're saying that, are you saying exercise is a component of this, or you're saying exercise is
no,
not going to make
exercise
you...
is counterproductive when you want to lose weight.
Because you build muscle, or for what reason is it counterproductive?
No, because you lose nutrients when you sweat. And so you're fighting yourself. You're trying to get more nutrients in. Okay, the symptom of these nutritional deficiencies is the munchies.
Right.
An uncontrollable desire to wake up in the middle of the night, have to go to the refrigerator and eat something. You just have 8,000 calories for dinner, Frank. Why are you getting up 2 hours later to go eat?
Right.
Well, that's because they're deficient in these nutrients, and the deficiency drives them to look for food to find that nutrient. Invariably, there's no nutrients in the food anymore, so it doesn't matter what you eat. And exercise, there was a big 10-year study by Loyola University School of Medicine published in January of 2009, cover article 8 months later in August of 2009, Time magazine, where they said exercise will not make you lose weight. Okay, you have to get down to 500 calories a day plus exercise, you'll lose weight. As soon as you come up to 1,000 calories again, which is about a third of what most Americans eat, 2,500 to 3,000 calories, you gain not only all your weight back, but an extra 10, 15, 20 pounds because you didn't deal with the nutritional deficiency.
So what is your, baby fat. Are you saying that we shouldn't be exercising?
It's counterproductive if you want to lose weight.
Okay, but
if you have a psychological need for it, go for it, but then you have to supplement more because you're sweating out the supplements.
Right.
Sweat is not water. Sweat is a soup that contains all the nutrients floating around your blood. If you're sweating them out faster than you're bringing them in, you're in danger.
But, aren't...
All the time.
Aren't people going to get a whole bunch of other disorders if they don't exercise? I mean, it seems strange
Name
to
one.
Me. Well, I don't know. I wasn't prepared.
There are none. Exercise is not required for life.
And so you think exercise...
failed theory. Sir, David, that's a failed theory.
Okay.
You need to read my new book, Epigenetics, The Death of the Genetic Theory of Disease Transmission. I don't want to move on to another biggie.
Before we move on, can you explain what a ketogenic diet is? Because you've used that phrase a few times.
Yeah, it's a high-fat, low-carb diet.
Okay, which is what a lot more people are saying in a lot of different areas. Like there was a book that came out called The Big Fat Surprise that went into the development of the theory that we could cure heart disease through a low-fat diet, which was wrong from the very beginning.
Terrible failure.
Yes.
They killed a billion people. They killed 1 billion people with that diet, and I'll tell you why in a second. I know we've only got a few minutes left here.
No, we have lots of time. We have lots of time.
Yeah, they killed 1 billion people since 1952 with a low-fat diet, low cholesterol, low saturated fat diet in the industrialized world.
Yeah,
and of course. Of course, it's because a low-fat, low cholesterol, low-saturated fat diet created Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a physician-caused disease. It's not genetic in any way, shape, or form. Alzheimer's disease is not caused by aluminum in your underarm deodorant. That's two stupid theories by the medical profession. And I said these things in 1971 when I was getting this book published that said the Smithsonian Institute. And it was published by W.B. Saunders, the biggest medical publishing house in the world. And you can get a new one of those books now, David, still in the box, still in the wrapper. They're $25,000 each. Okay? That's how much information was in there in 1971. Because I had done 20,000 autopsies, and nobody, no single person ever done that much before. 10 million chemistries with special stains, 10 million... slides with special stains looking for pollution as a contributor to deaths from natural causes and genetics. And guess what? Genetics have nothing to do with deaths from natural causes. Neither does pollution, which is what they were looking for. It turns out the nutritional deficiency causes all these deaths and all these diseases that are thought to be genetic by the medical profession.
Why
these
would animals be dying of nutritional deficiencies?
Well, they're fed human food.
Or industrially produced.
Species. Let's say you have zoo animals like pandas in captivity. They're all down to the last 12, and they're all dying. No babies, no fertility. And, you know, they're feeding them the very best bamboo that can be grown in the most fertile soils, and they're all dying. And so they brought some aborted fetuses to me, and I examined them and said, well, they're starving to death. And so I said, what are you feeding them? I said, you're feeding them bamboo. Well, pandas are bears. They don't just eat bamboo. They eat rats and they eat birds and eggs and potatoes and bark off of trees. So I just got them a good brand of dry dog food and started feeding them to the pandas. Suddenly now we're having all these baby pandas. We save pandas with dog food. And all the zoologists and biologists are horrified. We're giving an endangered species dog food.
Right.
Dog food has all 90 essential nutrients in it. That's why we've eliminated every birth defect you can think of. We've eliminated all this stuff. Okay?
Right.
And so I got to get to two more here, which are very important.
Yeah.
David, one is diabetes. It's a deficiency of a single mineral. We've known that for 85 years. It's the scourge of the earth right now. 28 to 32% of everybody in the industrialized world has type 2 diabetes.
Right.
There was a big study by UCLA just came out in March of 2016, and they said that 55% of all adults in California have type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes. Well, that's why people are going to be burying their babies. Our babies will be the first generation of Americans that do not live as long as their parents. That's a horrible outcome for for believing in doctors and all they say. And so that's just because they're not getting enough nutrition to survive.
And what is this mineral that is so critical?
I can't tell you. Okay, if I told you, everybody would run out and buy that mineral, and it wouldn't work because it needs 89 cofactors to work.
So it's not a single mineral.
They have to take all 90. But if you have all 90, if you only have 89 without that mineral, you'll get type 2 diabetes. If you have that mineral without the other 89, you might get 10% benefit.
Well,
the other 90% will still get diabetes.
Like, I appreciate the value of your supplements, but...
Okay, well, this is based on $100 billion worth of research.
No, I'm just saying that you should be more open about what is the most critical mineral. I'm not trying to get you to say that there's one magic mineral.
Okay, well, here's the deal, David. Americans are very silly because they believe their doctors. They don't get a second opinion. The doctor says, I'm going to cut your foot off. Okay, when are we going to schedule it? Instead of saying, you know, I'm going to get a second opinion from three or four other doctors at the university.
Right.
They'll get five bids for a roof on their house when their doctor they've been going to for 35 years hasn't cured their disease in 35 years. They say, well, now it's time to cut your foot off. Okay. They never get a second opinion. And so what happens is when you tell them what the nutrient is, like, for instance, congestive heart failure is caused by deficiency of a single vitamin. We've known that for 300 years. I get people on the heart transplant list. They're on 27 prescription drugs, and in 5 days' time, their cardiologist takes them off all their drugs in the heart transplant list because they don't have congestive heart failure anymore. That's why my book's in the Smithsonian Institute.
So what are some of the trace elements that are most deficient in the American diet, and why is it? Is
all
it agriculture?
That's the scary part. That's why we're going to be burying our kids, all of them. Here's why. This is why. People say, we're eating well. We could spend $1,000 a meal like billionaires, like Steve Jobs, and he died at 56. Okay, so what's going on here? Why is our food? Why are our soils depleted? And everybody will say because of bad farming practices. It's an absolute lie. That's not true. Not even close. What happened? What got us in trouble? After 5,000 years of doing okay, occurred at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street, New York City. There's a museum set up for that one moment. The very next day, that story was in every newspaper in the world because we had the telegraph. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street, New York City, in the bluff overlooking the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge. And so the story went out, and nobody paid attention to it. Oh, okay.
And what was the
story?
What
happened at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street, New York City, was that Thomas Edison pulled the switch in the first commercial electric generating plant. Within 10 years, every town, every municipality, and every city in the industrialized world converted from wood as a universal fuel to electricity. And within that 10 years, we began a rapid downward spiral in health. And that's because everybody put their wood ashes in the gardens as fertilizer, great fertilizer. Well, it turns out that wood ashes are not ashes. 95% to 98% of that powder we call wood ashes is the minerals that the trees suck up out of the ground. We fertilize those gardens with those nutritionals, and people got their nutritional minerals unknowingly, David, unknowingly, by eating the pumpkins and the squash and the carrots and the beets. And the tomatoes and the potatoes and the beans and peas and lentils and corn, they grew in those gardens fertilized with those minerals, a.k.a. wood ashes. When we went to electricity, that went away, and nobody knew they were getting the nutritional minerals from the wood ashes. Okay? In fact, Ladies Home Journal sold 1 million Edison's electric stoves in a 10-year period by saying, you don't have to handle the wood ashes anymore. No more dirt in your kitchen. Right?
The fact that I put the wood that I put in my barbecue in my compost is actually a good thing.
It's a good thing, as long as you don't burn any plastic or, you know, any...
Plumes. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And then they dammed up the rivers to make hydroelectric electricity, and so there was no flooding. And at first everybody thought, oh my gosh, that's a great unintended consequence. Not only do we get electricity, but now we have flood control. Well, now there's no more spring floods, and as a result, there's no more silt left behind when the flood water recedes, which was plowed in to renew the minerals every year. So now... According to a 100-year study, David, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture here in America, published last year, a 100-year study, it found that 95% of all Americans are seriously minerally deficient, 85% of our farm soils are minerally deficient because we cut off the food supply to the agricultural land. It's even worse than that a million times because we cut off the food supply to the ocean, which is the silt coming down from the mountains every spring in the floods.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cut off the silt supply to the ocean so there's no more food. And the whales are beginning to wash up on shore, dying of starvation. The sharks are eating people where they left people alone before because there's no more fish. We're growing fish in ponds in Texas and and North Carolina and Missouri because you can't get enough fish, worse the diesel fuel to get out there and fish for a day. And so we have a mess right now. And if you do not supplement, you will be burying your children. If you do not supplement, you will die 25 to 50 years early. If you do not supplement, you will be the most miserable human being on earth because you'll be on 27 drugs for years before you die.
Well, I don't supplement, and I'm pretty healthy. So
you're in trouble, David.
I'm in trouble. You talked in some of the stuff I read. You talked about selenium, which is one of the trace elements that probably most
selenium
people don't.
Is a wonderful trace mineral. In fact, as one of my 9 lawsuits against the FDA in which I prevailed, beginning in January of 2017, coming up here pretty soon, they're supposed to have selenium in the baby formulas now. There's no selenium in baby formulas right now. And selenium deficiency is the cause of SIDS, not babies sleeping on their stomach and suffocating. Selenium deficiency causes SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, a.k.a. crib death. Selenium deficiency is the cause of cystic fibrosis. Selenium deficiency is the cause of muscular dystrophy. So starting in January of 2017, within 5 or 6 months, we will end the scourge of SIDS, we'll end the scourge of cystic fibrosis, and we'll end the scourge of muscular dystrophy. I gave the information on muscular dystrophy to Jerry Lewis in 2011 with 100 case reports that their doctors said they were cured of muscular dystrophy. Their doctors took them off all their medication. Their doctors said they were cured, not me. And we gave all those records to Jerry Lewis. He took them to the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation, and they fired him, and they closed down the telethon in 2011. There hasn't been a telethon since 2011, so they fired Jerry Lewis because he brought them the cure for muscular dystrophy. So I've been doing that with thousands and thousands of kids every year now, and we're making a huge impact. And wait till the selenium goes in the baby formulas. Go read the mineral content of baby formulas. There's supposed to be 60.
So your prediction
no more than 5.
Your prediction is that when they add selenium to baby formula, there will be no more SIDS.
Fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, and SIDS
go away. So are there any breastfed babies dying of SIDS?
No.
None.
There was a big study done by India and the UK, came out about 10 years ago, that they were curious why only formula-fed babies were dying of SIDS in the UK and no breastfed babies were dying. That's because the mom, if she's still alive and she's survived that pregnancy, she's got enough selenium in her diet because she's eating liver, you know, for dinner. She's eating meat. She's eating eggs. And she's getting some selenium in her diet, and it's coming through the breast milk.
Some people think that vaccines are related to things like sudden...
Bam. That's an agenda by a few people.
So what are your thoughts about vaccines? Do they have any...
I didn't vaccinate my kids, our grandkids, great-grandkids. You... If 10,000 kids are dying every day in our town because of an epidemic, I'll vaccinate them.
Where are 10,000 kids dying of an epidemic in America?
There are none. That's why nobody should be vaccinated.
Okay, so I'm you're talking fast. I didn't. Let me start again.
If suddenly there's a situation in which there is a situation where 10,000 babies are dying every day, then I would have vaccinated my kids.
Okay, so
if
I didn't.
Kids aren't dying of a disease. Why vaccinate?
I didn't catch the answer to the question. What are your feelings about vaccines and the impact of vaccines on human health?
The impact of vaccines on human health, I don't think, are very high. Every once in a while, you might get one person out of a quarter of a million who has some kind of terrible reaction to it, and they get brain death or something, or some brain hemorrhage or whatever. That's usually because they're malnourished. They don't have enough nutrition for their arteries and their brains to be healthy, and so any inflammation will cause them to rupture. They're going to rupture by the time they're 30 years old anyway. But if they're taking in all 90 cents of nutrients, they can... Or even if they're taking in 60, they can survive a vaccination. But most kids are not getting all 60, okay? Again, because there's no nutrition or food. Plants only need 3 minerals, David. All vertebrates, hummingbirds, deer, crocodiles, and fish, and turtles, and elephants all require 60 minerals. Plants only need 3. You can't tell by looking at a tomato and smelling it whether it's nutritious or not. You can tell if it tastes good by smelling it and squeezing it, but you can't tell if it's nutritious because that tomato only needed 3 minerals. We need 60. And unless it's in the soil, unless you're fertilizing with those minerals, the tomato can't make them. Tomato can make carbon things. That's why I laugh when people say, well, we got too much carbon dioxide in the air. Well, then grow more tomatoes, grow more food. And the plants suck up all the carbon dioxide.
Well, yeah, it seems to me that that would be the best solution to there being too much CO2.
Yeah, then starvation, all kinds of problems.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I guess it would. Regarding gluten intolerance, the person who put me in touch with you, Allison Tomlinson, who I interviewed before, believes that she's highly gluten intolerant. Do you think that the number of gluten intolerant people is increasing, and why do you think that is?
We knew about gluten intolerance 5,000 years ago when the Egyptians switched from millet as the grain of the day to wheat. Wheat was a wild grass in the Fertile Crescent in Iraq, and they realized that a seed head for millet is only a half inch long, and a seed head for wheat is 3 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
So you triple your yield in the same piece of ground just simply by going to a different grain.
Right.
So everybody began to switch to wheat back 5,000 years ago, and then the Egyptian physicians noted all kinds of new diseases, including respiratory diseases like asthma and bronchitis, skin problems, eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis, and rosacea. Also bowel problems, appendicitis, are describing in their hieroglyphics of patients would have their bowels explode inside of them and kill them. And they had all kinds of problems, infertility, babies born with birth defects that never happened before. And that's because when you have gluten intolerance, you can't absorb nutrients. And so the rate of birth defects went up significantly back in those days because they were still fertilizing with wood ashes. But you can't absorb nutrients. You are not what you eat. You are what you absorb.
Right.
And it's highly problematic that our foods don't have the nutrients in them anymore. So let's say you only have 2% of selenium you need in your food now instead of 100%. Or 150% or 200%, you only have 2%, and you can only absorb 5%. What's 5% of 2%? You know, we're talking about 0.2% of what you need. And so that's why you see all these horrible things happening, and that's why experts are predicting that our children will be the first generation of Americans who do not live as long as their parents.
So is the problem with wheat that purely gluten, or is it lower in the minerals as well?
No, gluten. It's a gluten problem, causes the inflammation. We've done that with specific studies and laboratory animals, so we know it's a gluten problem. And so, but you have two problems running parallel here. Number one, there's no more nutrition in our food. And so even if you absorb 100% of it, there's nothing in it.
Do you think that the number of people, I mean, are you saying that all Egyptians were gluten intolerant or just some people?
Well, I think it was about 95 to 98% of all vertebrates, including human beings and dogs. You know, dogs used to be taken to the veterinarian every month for hot spots where they'd lick all the time and itch between their toes and on their hips, and they'd lick the hair off and have these big oozing 2-inch in diameter ulcers on their skin. They call them hot spots, and they go into the vet and they give them a cortisone shot and they'd be okay for a month, and they'd start up again the next month. That's gluten intolerance. You get them on a gluten-free dog food, they stop doing that. You don't need a $50 shot every month. And that's why you see so many gluten-free dog foods being advertised on TV now. That's going to break into the veterinarian's income stream, because they're not going to get dogs coming in with hot spots and itchy skin anymore.
What about,
okay?
I mean, I can't accept that everybody basically is gluten intolerant. I don't think I'm
get
gluten intolerant.
Get over it, David. Get over it. I see the wreckage on the autopsy table. I see the clinical cases by the thousands every month. I work in 55 countries. And starting next month, I'm going to be working in all 209 nations. It's like crazy, and it's the same problems all over the world. And everywhere, doctors say it's genetic, or it's caused by aluminum in your underarm deodorant, or it's caused by it's caused by vaccinations. The guy who brought that up out of England admitted under oath on the stand where he said he made it up because he was against vaccinations, so he thought...
Are you talking about Wakefield?
He blamed ADD and ADHD on it, so all the women would stop getting vaccinations.
That's actually absolutely not true. First of all, the study that Wakefield did not blame autism on vaccinations, and he never said that on the stand.
But that's what everybody... No, that's what everybody said he said.
That's what people said he said, but that's not what he said,
yeah.
So I don't think you should quote that.
It's like exercise, David. Get over it, you know? Everybody has an agenda.
Well, I have a hard time accepting that everybody is gluten intolerant. I don't think I am. I mean, are you saying that I'm gluten intolerant and I don't know it?
I don't know. I haven't met you and questioned you.
But you, if 95% of Egyptians were gluten intolerant, I mean, you seem to be implying that most Americans are gluten intolerant, and yet...
Vertebrates, all vertebrates. I don't care if you're a crocodile. You know, human beings were never meant to eat wheat. Get over it. Wheat was storable without refrigeration. You could store it for years, years, years in a dry place. And that's why people in the early days went to grain. Poor people couldn't afford land to have graze cattle and have milk and cheese and, and so forth, and raise poultry and have eggs and so forth. Every once in a while, they'd get a bird nest with an egg in, but that was rare.
Right.
And so most poor people were fishermen. They could wade out waist-deep in the rivers and the lakes and the oceans and catch fish, either spearing them or fishing with a fishing line.
Right.
And so poor people tended to be fishermen, and rich people tended to be cattlemen and livestock raisers.
Mm-hmm.
So they had land. And poor people went because catching animals was seasonal and had to travel all over, and sometimes they were successful, sometimes they weren't. So to have a constant calorie supply, they began to grow grain. And,
right.
And so grain was a poor man's food.
Yes.
And when you looked at, again, the Egyptian physicians, as soon as people started eating wheat, suddenly now they had all these new diseases 5,000 years ago, and it's only gotten worse and worse and worse over the years. And very few people made the connection between asthma and bronchitis and things like eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis, rosacea, appendicitis, Crohn's disease. I mean, you look on TV, all you see is UC now. UC is on TV now. What's UC? Ulcerative colitis. They even have a little acronym for it, UC. They have all these drugs for it. Well, really, you get on a gluten-free diet, you take your 90 essential nutrients, in 2 to 6 weeks, it'll be gone, and you won't have UC anymore. You won't have Crohn's disease anymore. You won't need your colon removed and all that kind of stuff and live with a bag the rest of your life. Totally unnecessary. That's what people will get from the book Epigenetics, the Death of the Genetic Theory of Disease Transmission. There's a whole section, and they're going through the evolution of agriculture and why we gave up, you know, wood for electricity and what it did to us, why we went from millet and rice and sweet potatoes to wheat. It was all an economical thing.
And what about corn? Because, like, the disease... pellagra, which is a vitamin B deficiency.
Yeah, vitamin B3.
It originated in Italy after they started using a lot of corn, which became the poor man's food, poor woman's food also in Italy.
Well, here's the deal. At that time, and this story is in the book Epigenetics, at that time, they already had Pasteur's germ theory, but all of the little grandmothers were going to doctors saying, look, if you let them eat the bran off of brown rice, the pellagra goes away. They'll never get it, even if they eat corn. If they eat the bran from brown rice,
right,
or even the bran from any grain, and they say, show me the germ, because all they believed in now was the germ theory.
They weren't doing
genetics yet. They only believed in the germ theory. Show me the germ. And people were dying by the thousands of pellagra, niacin deficiency, B3 deficiency, because people were using corn, as you said, it was brought from the New World, and they had all these famines over there in Europe, and corn would grow even with the famines, and they had calories.
Yeah, tell me what you think about this. My theory of these famines is that at the time of war or other economic stresses, that the poor people's diet that probably included a little bit of meat or cheese or things like that suddenly became pure corn because of the shortages of foods. And that's why famines were often associated with wars or other, economic disasters. A war is an economic disaster, of course.
Yeah, or they burn the crops. You know, one enemy would burn the crops of the other and so forth. And so not only was their diet reduced to a single nutrient, maybe, or a single food, the enemy was burning it.
Right. And it's also notable with many of these epidemics that they're epidemics of the poor. And they're the rich who still have, you know, some meat and other products in their diet would not be suffering.
And they were eating mummy dust as a supplement.
Mummy dust.
Yeah, they would pay grave robbers great sums of money to bring them royal mummies. They would grind them up into dust and use them as a condiment, like salt and pepper on their food, because they wanted the longevity essence of the mummies. They wanted to be able to travel through eternity like the mummies before they died.
And
so they're eating mummy dust, getting prepared for their death before they died, getting the essence. They didn't know there was nutrition in mummy dust.
Which would be minerals,
bones,
right?
And cartilage and livers and B12 stored in their livers and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't embalming fluid. They were mummifying them by desiccation, by drying them, and also maybe use some aromatherapy oils, which weren't toxic, and so they could eat these ground up bones and cartilage and ligaments and tendons and livers and muscle and heart and brains and skin and so forth. And they were getting their nutritional minerals from mummy dust, but of course slaves and poor people couldn't do that. They were getting it from wood ash.
Some minerals can be toxic in high quantities. Like I believe.
Oh, yeah, most people aren't going to do that. They're not going to buy 60 bottles of selenium a month and take 60 bottles of selenium a month. Everything has a bell-shaped curve, including oxygen, water. There's more people who die of water toxicity each year than die of anything such as herbal supplements or vitamin mineral supplements.
Well, let's take a mineral like chromium. There are mm-hmm. places in the United States where there's chromium poisoning from industrial plants. So what's the difference between chromium in a supplement and chromium from groundwater pollution or something
like
that?
Well, you have two options if you know that there's pollution from a manufacturing thing, which happened in Minamata, Japan with mercury many years ago. When you know these things, and it's very easy, if there's a plant upriver from you, I just go get some water and take it to the county and say, "Test, this is my well water. I want you to see what you think." And say, "Oh my gosh, you got 20 times the toxic level of lead," or 20, like in Flint, Michigan, you got mm-hmm. 20 times the toxic level of chromium in there. Well, you have two possibilities. You can get these filters for your water system. You can buy bottled water from somewhere else. Oh, I guess three, you can move away.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit there and keep drinking this stuff.
Well, I think a lot of people don't have a lot of options.
Well, people do have options. That's not true. They do have options. They can go for 17 cents a quart. I can buy bottled water for a case at 17 cents a quart in any grocery store. Just 17 cents a quart for bottled water. And so I can find that much money every day in the parking lots around the grocery store on the ground. You know, so people can't say they can't afford it. That's nonsense. 17 cents a day, they're smoking. They'll buy a pack of cigarettes for $3. They won't buy a 17-cent bottle of water. So I don't buy that. That's
I mean, shouldn't our municipal water systems be drinkable, don't you think?
Of course. But, you know, you can trust, but you always want to verify, don't you? You ever heard of survival of the fittest, David?
Well, I think in economic systems, yes, I've heard of survival of the fittest. I'm not.
Okay, that includes decisions. And you want to make decisions based on information. And so you just can't sit there and hope some bureaucrat is going to make sure your water's safe. So
well,
why not test your own water?
Shouldn't we be able to?
They live in,
shouldn't we be able to assume that the bureaucrats will keep our water
no,
safe? Isn't that what they're there for?
Assumptions make you dead.
But, I mean, shouldn't we fix the problem where the government is...
Yeah, you can fix the problem. In the meantime, you have to be able to drink water, so you have to find a cheap source of good water.
Right. But if you were living in poverty in Flint, you don't have a vehicle, I mean, don't you see that there's problems for some people?
I would walk to the grocery store, and I would find enough money on the way to the grocery store to buy a case of water. I would also buy dog food to eat. Because all dog food has 90 cents of nutrients in it.
I mean, it does seem like the diet of the poor in America is a particular problem.
You're expecting everybody to eat steak and eggs and all that. That's wonderful. But you still need a supplement. On the other hand, if you can't afford steak and eggs, eat dog food. Why do people living under the bridge live to be 78, David, and billionaires, on the average, according to Forbes magazine, live to be 66. That's because billionaires eat very best food. They spend $1,000 a meal that has no nutrition in it.
Yeah,
and people living under the bridge are getting dog food. They're getting all 90 cents of nutrients by eating dog food.
And that's what you think is the solution to everything, if you have those essential minerals.
If you're living under the bridge and you don't have any money, you're talking about poor people, they can't afford steak and eggs, and you're waiting for the government, some bureaucrat, to find a way to take money from you to give them free steak and eggs, you're going to be frustrated. It ain't going to happen.
I've heard stories of poor people eating dog food, but I've never heard any of those stories verified, and you're saying it's a common...
Yeah, well, that's probably the smartest thing you can do if you want to survive and do well, have healthy kids. There's $100 billion worth of research in dog food.
Yes, well, I'm sure there has been a lot for... But, I mean, humans and animals, every species has its own unique nutritional needs. I mean, take breast milk.
No, that's not true.
Well,
that's not true. It goes by body weight, David. Listen, I've autopsied 454 species, from whales to gorillas down to shrews, which weigh a couple ounces, and hummingbirds, which weigh a half an ounce, if they're deficient in the same nutrients that, based on their body weight now, the whale, the hummingbird, the shrew, the elephant, the crocodile, the human being, the dog, the cow, the horse will all die of the same disease.
So
it has nothing to do with species.
They could all eat.
If you're a vertebrate, you all need the same nutrients.
So why can't humans survive on cow milk instead of human breast milk if we are all the same in terms of our nutritional needs? Like, why is cow milk
because
so dangerous?
Because it's designed for a 40-pound baby.
But
cow milk is designed for a 40-pound baby. If you want babies to survive on animal milk, it's got to be goat and sheep milk.
Right, but surely,
I'm
not an expert on the different kinds of breast milk and different animals.
It goes by body weight, David.
But the percentage, body weight, yeah, but if you drink the appropriate quantity of milk, there will be different amounts.
A human baby would have to drink a gallon of milk to get it. They're not going to do it.
So, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. So what you're saying
it's
is that
dilute. Cow's milk is too dilute for a human baby.
Okay, so you...
designed for a 40-pound calf.
So the trace elements that are in the cow's milk are at too low of a level because a cow will drink that much more.
Now you can get it from sheep milk, you can get it from goat's milk because those babies are only 4 or 5 pounds.
Right, because they're more similar
concentrated
in weight. But still, I mean, do you really think that goat's milk is a perfect replacement for human milk?
It's a perfect replacement for human milk.
it is. And you think that all animals...
If the goat is getting all 90 essential nutrients.
And so wouldn't it then apply that big animals, if they ate dog food, would have an imbalanced amount of nutrients then? Because they'd be eating so much...
Well, if you look at dog food, it says one scoop of this for 10 pounds. So a 100-pound dog gets 10 scoops, a 10-pound dog gets one scoop. It's all by body weight in veterinary medicine because we deal with hummingbirds all the way up to elephants and whales. And so we've learned a long time ago it's body weight. In medicine, they say, if you're under 12, eat this much or take this much medication. If you're over 12, take this much. That's nonsense. It goes by body weight. If you're a 12-year-old kid and you weigh 300 pounds, you need to take a 300-pound dose. If you're a 90-year-old woman and you only weigh 85 pounds, you need to take a 100-pound person's dose.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about these things in that way.
I know. That's why we're in trouble, because you're a very intelligent guy, and you still believe in the four food groups.
Well, no, I don't. But
whole grains and all that kind of stuff.
I'm just questioning whether everybody is gluten intolerant, because I don't seem to be...
Well, I wouldn't say everybody, but 98%.
I must be one of the 2% then. Are there some things
that... We'll see how long you live and how long you'll be healthy, because a lot of times you don't show up with the diseases until you're 50.
Well, I'm 60. Is there something else that you would like to add to this conversation, which has been...
Well, there's a lot of diseases I want to talk about, but you got hung up on this thing here, so we ate up 15
Okay, let's
minutes.
Pick
I,
another...
I have to go here.
Okay.
I've had 16 calls. I have to go here, David.
Okay, well, it's been very stimulating talking to you. I think I agree with a lot of things you say. I'm not sure I agree with everything, but that's
well,
why
this
I...
Well, America.
That's why I like interesting guests. Challenging guests. So thank you very much for joining me today, Dr. Wallach.
Well,
and I will put
don't
on...
Don't forget, if people want to get my stuff and get my view, my CDs, DVDs, and books, of which there are 14 best-selling books on the subject, so it's not like it's a mystery.
And your website is?
The website is drjwallach.com.
drjwallach.com. And I will put that. I will put that link in the show notes. Which will be available after we air on PRN.fm.
Okay, well, David, thank you so much for your hospitality. Thank you so much for the great work you do in getting information out to people. We love you for it. We appreciate you, and God bless you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
After this interview, I reflected for a while on the problems with so many people who criticize modern medicine or other aspects of modern civilization, that they pick on one problem or one solution and push it as the cause or cure for everything. They are so self-confident that they carry some people along with them on a wave of enthusiasm and certainty, but I'm always skeptical. In this last interview with Dr. Wallach, I don't believe that one supplement will work for every person, even if it has 91 different nutrients. I don't believe that the majority of people are gluten intolerant. I don't believe that there are people under bridges surviving well on dog food. And I don't believe that even a perfectly balanced nutrition for one animal, such as dog food or cow's milk, would work for other animals, including humans. Maybe I took this a little bit personally. The day before the interview, I climbed a mountain. For those who count these things, a snow peak is 900 meters high. That's almost 3,000 feet above where we started. And I think the fact that I can do this at the age of almost 60 shows that I'm healthy, although perhaps not as healthy as my most frequent hiking partner, who is both older than me and faster. I think exercise is important, an important component of health. And I was quite shocked when Dr. Wallach said that people who exercise basically are wasting their time. I do agree with Dr. Wallach that nutrition has many components, and although I can't vouch for his products, I wouldn't be surprised if many people find them beneficial, particularly people who've been through some kind of physical stress, who've been exposed to pharmaceutical drugs, radiation, perhaps chemical exposures at work. I'm sure there are many people who would find them making a really big difference in their life. But I don't think this applies to everyone, and I still believe that it's possible to be well-nourished without supplements. I, for example, don't take any supplements. From personal experience, I do know that nutrition is important. I have a bit of a confession to make. Although I climbed a mountain on the day before the interview, the day before that, I had sat around with a friend watching the Trump-Clinton debate, trying to count the lies of both of them. And my friend and I drank too much and ate only snack food. I don't normally do this, and halfway up the mountain, I felt absolutely horrible. However, it was nothing that a couple of sandwiches and a bottle of water couldn't fix, but I guess I learned a lesson. Dr. Wallach is not the only guest who's illustrated this problem with overselling problems or solutions related to health. Virologist Stefan Lanke in episode 97 had me agreeing with him that viruses don't exist. But I can't buy into German new medicine that claims that every disease has a specific psychological cause. It may well be that the solutions that German new medicine promotes, which involve dealing with past psychological traumas, are helpful to some people, sometimes very helpful. I accept that the mind can cause some illnesses, i.e. through stress or trauma. However, I also believe that many other diseases are caused by exposure to chemicals, including pharmaceuticals, bad nutrition, lack of exercise, and so on. Woodrow Monti, a nutrition scientist in episode 24, blamed the rise in chronic disease since the early 1980s on aspartame. I agree with him that aspartame should never have been approved, is totally unnecessary, probably doesn't help with weight loss, and should not be consumed by anyone. But it's a bit much to claim that it's caused all of the rise in these diseases, which is what his graphs and statements imply. Now, these are only a handful of my guests, but it pains me that they undercut their own benefits to society by focusing so much on their own theories that they oversell the importance of their findings. A lot of people recoil from someone like that, since they, like me, simply don't believe that there are such simple solutions to the problems of human health. I think that there are many things in our society that are making many people sick. One of them that I didn't mention is the low-fat craze that has infected America since the 1950s, and I can recommend the book Big Fat Surprise. I really want to interview someone on this, and I have tried to pin someone down but haven't succeeded yet. I will keep trying. We should, in fact, be eating diets with more fats, more saturated fats, and probably more cholesterol. But I'm not going to say that all obesity, all diabetes, and all heart attacks are caused by this one thing. I must say, though, that every time I go to the grocery store and see the Greek yogurt, it upsets me terribly. There was a time when Greek yogurt was the new superfood, but it's actually about 35% butterfat. It's really high in fat. I mean, it's getting pretty close to being butter. And I guess somebody said, well, you know, I've heard Greek yogurt is really good, but there's no way I'm going to eat that much fat because they've been propagandized by the low-fat diet. So the food company said, well, why don't we make no-fat, 0% fat Greek yogurt? That's a ridiculous notion, because Greek yogurt is Greek yogurt because it has fat in it. But they said if we fill it with cornstarch or some other carbohydrate, we can make it feel in your mouth like it's actually a high-fat food. It has the feel in your mouth of Greek yogurt, even though it's not Greek yogurt. It's basically cornstarch pudding. And they've successfully sold this so that the vast majority of Greek yogurt, in quote marks, ironic quotes, in the refrigerators at the supermarkets is actually low-fat or no-fat Greek yogurt, which is a complete contradiction in terms. It is a total scam on the people of the modern world, and it's not healthy at all. And yet, people fall for it, obviously, judging by the amount of the stuff that's sold. That's just one example. So there are huge problems in our diet that we need to fix. And although there's more awareness now, this shows that there are still people falling for the tricks of the food industry. Let me know what you think about this. I do appreciate your feedback. Let me know even if you think that I didn't do a good job with the interview, or that my guest wasn't up to snuff, or both. Try to be polite, but let me know what you think. And if I think your comments are interesting, I will read them on the air. While we're talking about medicine and health, let's go through my medical mailbag, some interesting articles I found over the past few months. In episode 72, I talked to Edmund McNack, who'd been exposed to highly toxic AIDS medications because he had been bitten by a prisoner that he was taking somewhere in his work as a sheriff's deputy. The Centers for Disease Control has actually updated the guidelines for what's called post-exposure prophylaxis. That is the drugs you're supposed to take after you've been exposed to, say, somebody's blood that is HIV positive. And they've actually backed off a little bit, which is interesting, although there's not been any attention to this. The guidelines say that post-exposure prophylaxis is not recommended when the reported exposure presents no substantial risk of HIV transmission, and is not recommended when people wait more than 3 days before reporting the incident. This will reduce significantly the number of people who get these toxic AIDS drugs. And in Edmund McNack's case, which occurred in 1998, these new guidelines would have meant that he would have not received the drugs that destroyed his health, made him unable to work, and if he didn't have such a positive attitude, would have destroyed his life, I think. Canada has discovered that the major cause of liver disease in Canada is acetaminophen, commonly found in drugs like Tylenol. Dr. Michael Ryder, a pediatric clinical pharmacologist at Western University, quoted by CBC News as saying, "It is the most common cause of liver injury, period, full stop." The CBC article writes that part of the challenge with acetaminophen is that it's found in Tylenol and more than 400 over-the-counter products, including combination cold and cough medicines, nighttime products such as NyQuil and Sinutab. Doctors and pharmacists may recommend acetaminophen to treat minor aches and pains, the common cold, viral and bacterial infections, headache, toothache, strains and sprains, and menstrual cramps. And of course, it's not actually treating them at all. It's just masking the symptoms. Health Canada reports that about 4,500 people are hospitalized in Canada due to acetaminophen overdoses, and about 16% of these are accidental. 16% of 4,500 is still a pretty big number, but it's also quite possible that there's a lot of people who are hospitalized where it's never recognized that the cause of their liver problems is the use of acetaminophen, especially with so many products containing the drug, and it appears a low rate of awareness. It's possible that the number is considerably higher. Another liver specialist from Vancouver General Hospital, Dr. Eric Yoshida, is quoted, and he says he regularly sees patients suffering liver failure from accidental acetaminophen overdose. both the doctors quoted in this article, Ryder and Yoshida, would like to see the amount of acetaminophen in products restricted to the regular strength dose, which is 325 milligrams. But given the different sensitivities of people and the ability to take multiple pills, that probably wouldn't completely resolve the problem. Personally, I resolve the problem that if I ever have pain, I try to avoid any kind of a painkiller, including things like Tylenol. Ars Technica reported on September the 2nd that the Food and Drug Administration is pulling a wide range of antimicrobial soaps from the market after manufacturers failed to show that they're both safe and more effective than plain soap. This applies to more than 19 specific chemicals, including triclosan, which is found in antibacterial hand soap, and triclocarbon, found in bar soaps. Manufacturers have a year to reformulate or pull the products entirely. Not only did the FDA find that these soaps have very little benefit to consumers, but they may actually pose risks through increasing antibiotic-resistant microbes, giving opportunistic pathogens a leg up after you kill the good pathogens, and disrupting microbiomes. Consumers, the FDA said, consumers may think antibacterial washes are more effective at preventing the spread of germs, but we have no scientific evidence that they are any better than plain soap and water. It's nice to see the FDA doing something good for a change. Episode 44 in January of 2015, I interviewed Lisa Bloomquist, who talked about the dangers of fluoroquinolone antibiotics. And about a year later, January of this year, a Drug Watch news report talked about five former users of one of those drugs, Levaquin, suing Johnson & Johnson and its Janssen unit on the basis of downplaying side effects to boost sales. The BBC had an interesting article on September 15th that reported on the death of a young Chinese actress from cancer. Xu Ting, who was only 26 years old, was diagnosed with lymphoma earlier this year. She did not take chemotherapy. She said, "I don't want to let chemotherapy torment me to the point where I look unrecognizable and have lost all my money and myself." But her condition worsened, and she did eventually resort to chemotherapy and died of cancer on September 7th. Maybe cancer or maybe her treatments. Now, of course, normally there would be a screed against alternative medicine with people commenting, as there were some people quoted, "Listen to me. Chinese medicine is absolutely useless to cure cancer. If you don't want to listen to me, at least listen to a doctor." But what was interesting is that the BBC actually allowed some alternative views. A writer from the Beijing Evening News said, "There are many cancer patients who pass away after receiving chemotherapy. Will these same people also say that Western medicine is a sham?" Another wrote, "Chinese medicine is thousands of years old. Not everything Western doctors say is true." It's interesting that the BBC, interesting to me anyway, which tends to avoid controversy and generally strictly supports allopathic medicine, would actually allow both sides to express an opinion and not just use this personal tragedy as an opportunity to bash anything now considered alternative. I suppose it is also true that if somebody famous died after taking chemotherapy, it would be described by the BBC and other mainstream media outlets as dying from cancer, rarely dying from chemotherapy, although sometimes it's slyly said dying from the complications of cancer, which is code for dying from the treatments. Thank you for listening to episode 117 of The Infectious Myth. If you've got a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com, like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth, or follow us on Twitter @infectiousmyth. Until next week, goodbye.